ordination of Isidasi. The merchant was at a loss what to do for his daughter. Deserted, even by a beggar, Isidasi was very unhappy. She felt humiliated and despaired of her fate and the worldly life. She thought of leaving her parents either to die or to join the holy order. At this time, an elderly bhikkhuni named Zinadatta came to the merchant's house for her daily collection of food. Isidasi paid obeisance to her and after offering the food, asked her for admission into the Sangha. The merchant dissuaded his daughter from becoming a bhikkhuni, saying that she could as well give alms and lead a good life as a laywoman. Of course, he did not want to part with his only daughter. With tears in her eyes, Isidasi replied that her misfortunes were probably due to the evil deeds which she had excessively committed in her previous life, that she wished to cleanse herself of her unwholesome karma by practicing the Dharma as a bhikkhuni. Thereupon, her father considered it inadvisable to obstruct her and gave his permission. He also expressed his best wishes for her. May you attain the insight knowledge on the level of the Aryan path and the highest good of arahatship that have been realized by the Supreme Buddha. May you attain Nibbana. Then Isidasi took leave of her parents and other elders of her family and received ordination at the hands of Teri Zinadatta. And before long, by virtue of her high karmic potential, she became within a week an arahat endowed with the three kinds of insight knowledge, the three vijjas. The attainment of arahatship after the practice of the Dhamma for 7 days was due to special karmic potential. Those who achieve extraordinary insight in such a short time are extremely rare among the yogis here. Those who practice Dhamma ceaselessly and diligently every day and every night usually attain Udayabhaya and Bhanga Jnana, insight knowledge, in a week. Isidasi attained the threefold insight after a 7-day practice, and this knowledge means 1. Knowledge which enables one to recall all previous existences, pūbenivāsa jñāna. 2. Knowledge that enables one to see everything in heaven, hell, and other parts of the universe that are invisible to the naked eye, dibba chakku jñāna. And 3. Knowledge that is synonymous with knowledge of the arahata path, that can help to eradicate all biases and defilements. Asava kaya jnana. The attainment of this last knowledge is arahatship. Isidasi achieved her object in 7 days. And in retrospect, she might have to congratulate herself on having been deserted by one husband after another. But for desertion by her first husband, she would not have married the second man. Still less thought of becoming a bhikkhuni. Indeed, even her permanent union with the beggar might have ruled out the possibility of a religious life for her. In fact, she joined the holy order because of her disenchantment with life. She became an arahat in 7 days and achieved complete freedom from all suffering, rooted in the wheel of life. For her, desertion by one husband after another was in a sense a blessing in disguise. Thus we should view the case of Isidasi wisely. It must have been much gratifying to Isidasi that although she had to suffer much because of her evil karma, she benefited by her suffering to become an arahat eventually. So when a misfortune befalls us, we should not be obsessed by it and become despondent. We should take an optimistic view of it. This attitude of mind that helps to console us and serves our spiritual need is called yoniso manasikara in Pali. But no woman should want to be deserted by her husband like Isidasi. For although Isidasi became an arahat, it will be difficult for other women to turn their misfortune to advantage as she did. As Isidasi recalled her past lives through her insight knowledge, Pupeni Vasa Jnana, the recollections of her evil deeds and consequent sufferings during her last seven existences dawned upon her. 1. In the first existence, she was a goldsmith in the city of Erakicha. As a young man in close contact with many women, he committed adultery. Because of this evil deed on his death, 2. He landed in hell, where he suffered for a long time. 3. Then he was reborn as a monkey. 7 days after its birth, the herd leader bit off its testicles and castrated it as it did not want any male member. This was the karmic effect of adultery. 4. Then in his next existence, he became a ram. The ram was castrated and probably killed for human food. 5. In his fifth existence, he was also castrated to be used for ploughing or drawing cart. The bull is usually castrated for its docility. When we were young, we saw some bulls being castrated. It was a terrible sight. The bull was tied down and his testicle beaten and battered with a wooden club. It must have been very painful. The animal could not eat for 3 or 4 days. Afterwards, when it was strong enough to work, it had to toil under the burning sun or in the rain without being able to complain of even sickness. In the end, when it became very old, it was sold to the butcher regardless of its long service to the owner. Then it died helpless and forlorn at the hands of the butcher. The life of such an animal is heart-rending indeed. 6. In her sixth existence, she was conceived in the womb of a slave woman, and thus she became a born slave. Still worse, she had no male or female organs at birth, a shameful abnormality that was the karmic effect of adultery. For 30 years she suffered, and then, 7, in her seventh existence, she was reborn as the daughter of a poor, wretched cartman. As her father could not repay his debt to the caravan chief, the girl was enslaved by the latter. She had to do all kinds of work at the chief's house. Fortunately, she was good-looking, and when she grew up, she became the concubine of the chief's son, Giridasa. The wife and the concubine usually do what is harmful to each other's interest. The concubine slandered the wife in order to create discord between her and her husband. but the wife was a woman of good moral character. And so the slanderous remarks against the good woman were fraught with very negative karma, and now, with adultery in a previous life, she was now worsening her destiny by her evil speech. In fact, Issi Darcy admitted her mistake and attributed her former husband's hatred, despite her slavish devotion to them, to the karmic effect of her slanderous remarks in a previous life. She added that because of her evil karma, she was deserted even by a beggar, and that she had done away with her evil karmic debt by following the way to arahatship and nirvana. This is most important. Arahatship means the complete extinction of all karmic potentials. Karma bears no more fruit. It is the arahat's last existence. And when its course is run, he or she attains parinibbana. After parinibbana, there is no renewal of life or mind-body complex. So Issi Darcy attained parinibbana, and her suffering came to an end once and forever. Conclusion. This story has a lesson for both men and women. Adultery led the goldsmith to hell. And then, when reborn as a monkey, a ram, and a bull, he was castrated. And then he became a sex freak born of a slave girl. These were the heavy karmic prices he had to pay for the momentary pleasure of adultery. Then the girl's karma worsened when she slandered a virtuous woman. Her misdeed must have caused a lot of discord and suffering to others. This should be a good lesson for wives, for concubines, and polygamous husbands. As a result of her misdeed, even in her last existence as Issi Darcy, the daughter of a rich man, she was deserted by three husbands in a row, the last one being a beggar. All these are the evil karmic effects of calumny. Harsh language. Parusa vacha. Other peoples may indulge in harsh language, but we will avoid it. Thus you should practice the Salaika Dhamma that lessens defilements. Parusa vacha is harsh talk, such as abusing, scolding, and cursing. This kind of talk is very painful to the person concerned, unpleasant even to those who have nothing to do with it. Nobody wants to hear such utterances, and a wise man abhors them in order to be karmically effective. The use of harsh language must involve three factors. The person who is abused or cursed, ill will against that person, and the act of abusing or cursing. In the absence of any unwholesome desire to cause pain or annoyance, the use of harsh language is karmically fruitless. Once a boy went into the jungle against the advice of his mother. The mother was angry and cursed him. "May you be gored to death by a buffalo." In the jungle, the boy saw a she-buffalo, which came as if to kill him. The boy invoked the power of truthfulness, saying, "Let it happen, not according to what my mother has uttered, but according to her desire and will." It is said that the animal then stopped and stood still. Some parents often call down curses, such as violent death from the attack of buffaloes, snake bite, etc., upon their disobedient children. But in reality, they do not want to see the slightest harm befall their kids. Teachers too scold their unruly pupils, saying, "Go away, all of you. Don't stay with me. I don't care a damn for whatever happens to you." But in fact, they have the moral and material welfare of their pupils at heart. Such a kind of speech or talk, although verbally harsh, does not stem from bad motives, and as such, it is not karmically fruitful. On the other hand, a gentle remark that springs from evil desire or feeling is karmically effective. Quote, "Let this man sleep soundly and happily," end quote, is what the ancient kings used to say euphemistically about a man they wanted to be executed. But the remark is based on ill will, and so it has karmic effect. Therefore, we should avoid abusing and cursing. We should utter only words that are rightly motivated, gentle, pleasant, and acceptable. We should overcome the use of harsh language through commitment to moral precepts and through concentration on an object. We must rely on insight meditation, vipassana, when we have to face unpleasant sense objects. We tend to use harsh language when we are irritated by undesirable sense objects. We should eliminate it through mindfulness. In particular, a remark which one dislikes often evokes harsh language, and so we must be especially mindful when we hear unpleasant words. Case of a man who conquers through mindfulness. In my native village of Sekun in Shuibo district, there is a yogi who is very mindful. He has been a monk for 20 years. While he was a layman, he noted hearing, whenever he heard his father-in-law rebuking him. The rebuke lasted probably about 10 minutes. To him, the voice of the speaker, as well as his words, disappeared instantly, and he did not know anything about what the old man was saying. He was not angry, nor did he have any desire to retort. But for his mindfulness, he would have retorted angrily and uttered harsh words. This is a very good way to overcome the habit of speaking harshly, and other people can follow it. It also helps to overcome anger and ensures the complete extinction of the habit when, through the development of insight knowledge, the yogi attains the Aryan path, Aryamagga. But since slander and harsh speech stem from anger, the yogi can wholly overcome these defilements only at the Anagami stage. The Sotapatti stage ensures only the extinction of evil speech habits that lead to the lower worlds. At the Sakadagami stage, the yogi is assured of only the extinction of the gross forms of harsh speech and slander that does not lead to the lower worlds. He is not yet free from the subtle forms of slander and harsh utterances, which become wholly extinct only at the Anagami stage. Visuddhimagga describes slander, harsh speech, and ill will as the three unwholesome propensities that are to be eliminated at the anagami stage. So the yogi should try to attain anagami stage to overcome them. Karmic effects. According to Anguttara Nikaya, those who use harsh language are liable to land in the netherworlds, and if reborn in the human world, will be very often abused and scolded. Some people curse a thief with violent death or damnation to hell. Such curses are in vogue among the Indian sadhus and fakirs. They would curse a man who does not give them what they ask for. And it is the popular belief that anyone who has been cursed by them is in for a lot of misfortune. People are afraid of their curses, probably because their holy books, the Puranas, tell them how misfortunes befell those who were placed under a curse by the holy men. Buddhist monks do not curse others or swear an oath. According to Buddhism, a curse by itself can cause no misfortune, which is only due to bad karma. In point of fact, a curse is likely to recoil on the one who utters it, as is shown in the following story from the Petavatu. Rebirth as a Peta because of curses. In the time of the Buddha, 12 bhikkhus spent their rain retreat at a village of 11 families. The chief weaver provided the necessities of life for 2 monks, while each of the other 10 families cared for each of the other 10 monks. The weaver's wife was a non-believer and had no faith in the Sangha, so she did not serve the monks respectfully. Then the weaver married his wife's sister, to whom he transferred all his property. As a pious woman, she served the monks with much respect. At the end of the Lent, each monk was offered a robe. Then the elder wife was so enraged that she cursed, "Let the food and drink, which you have offered to the Sakya monks, become excreta, urine, pus and blood. Let the robes turn into glowing iron sheets." After their death, the weaver became a tree god, and his elder wife, a peta, near his mansion. She had nothing to wear and nothing to eat, so she begged the tree god for food and clothes. But when the god gave some food and drinks, they turned into excreta in the hands of the peta. The god provided celestial clothes too, but they became glowing iron sheets as soon as they were worn by the peta. So the peta discarded the burning iron clothes and ran away crying. The curse in her previous life having thus boomeranged on her. Her unhappy plight came to the notice of a monk who was visiting the place, and on his advice, the god offered food to him and shared the merits with the peta. The peta was then able to eat the celestial food, and she became well nourished. Then the god entrusted to the care of the monk a suit of celestial robes to be offered to the Buddha, and again the peta got part of the merit, and this made her beautiful like a goddess in her new dress. So a good deed is a remedy for a person who is suffering because of his or her own curse. of use leads to the world of pettas. In the time of the Buddha, there was in a village near Sarvati a faithful laborist called Nandisena. His wife Nanda had no faith and no manners. She did not respect her husband, and she abused him and her mother-in-law. After her death, she became a peta and prowled in the village neighborhood. One day she appeared before Nandisena, identified herself as his former wife, and attributed her rebirth in the peta world to her rudeness, lack of respect for her husband, and the habit of abusing him in her previous existence. Life as a peta was the price she had to pay for her rudeness to her good husband. Had she apologized to him, she might have been freed from evil karmic effects. But the woman Nanda had done nothing of the sort. Nandisena handed his cloak to the peta and told her to wear it and follow him to his house, where she could have clothes and food. But the peta said that she could have such things only if he made offerings to the virtuous bhikkhus. Nandisena did so and shared his merits with her, and she said, "Sadhu, sadhu, well done, well done." The peta got celestial food and clothes and became beautiful, like a goddess. These stories show how abusiveness leads to the lower worlds. The karmic rewards for those who avoid harsh language and speak gently are just the opposite. Those who speak gently and tolerate abuse instead of repaying it in kind land in deva worlds. There are stories in Vimanavatu illustrative of such karmic rewards. If reborn in the human world, they are spoken to gently, and they hear only sweet voices. Abstinence from the use of harsh language is also beneficial in the present life. A man who speaks gently endears himself to everybody. He is highly esteemed and is not in conflict with his friends. So we should cultivate the habit of speaking gently. We must not speak when we are angry. We should first overcome anger through mindfulness and speak gently. We can profit by this practice here and now.